tonight I'm going to talk about the joys of generosity. And they are profound. Generosity is a profound practice. It's foundational. It's particularly important for us as lay people. Monastics follow a very intense practice that's geared toward an explosion of sudden enlightenment. Actually, I doubt if they would put it in those terms. That comes out of the Sutta. But for those of us householders who don't live in a monastic situation and devote 24/7 to the practice, there's a method that leads to a more gradual awakening. And in Asia, it's gradual. It's the first phase is generosity. And they figure it takes 10 years for that practice of generosity, of dana, to take effect. And then it's 10 years of practice with ethics, the three parts of the Eightfold Path that are aimed at that, and the five precepts that you've probably heard something about. And then 10 more years for mind training, meditation. Whenever new people came to Buddha for the teachings, if they didn't yet identify him as their spiritual leader, he would start by emphasizing the value of giving. And only when they appreciated how important generosity was would he go on and offer them other teachings. So we here in the West kind of have things out of order. And there are times when it seems too bad, but I'm sure you've noticed that we practice dana here. And we make a big deal out of it. We make a real point to practice it. And this is why. Because the practice of generosity begins a process of weakening the tendencies that we have. They're just part of our habitual thinking to cling to the views that we already have, the opinions, the attitudes, the ways of seeing things. And also, we cling to the idea that sensual pleasure is going to make us happy. We cling to those pleasures. And we cling to unskillful modes of thought and behavior. We need to learn, the mind needs to learn to let go of this stuff. Just to make this clear, generosity is the foundation of spiritual development. You can't really do your meditation practice and your ethics and then go back and do the generosity. It really needs to be incorporated into your practice right from the beginning. The Eightfold Path leads to the destruction of greed, hate, and delusion. But the cultivation of generosity directly debilitates greed and hatred. Meanwhile, it's facilitating that flexibility of the mind that comes from letting go of those things I just talked about. And that allows for the eradication of delusion. Letting the mind just sort of soften up and stop clinging to those things. So now I'm going to get to the joy part. Attachment, as I said in my email, cannot exist at the same time as generosity. So there is a component of peaceful joy in generosity because it has let go. And I'll illustrate that a little more later as I move along. I want to make sure that you understand that the giving that I'm talking about in this talk includes service and other things that we do out of generosity. And we have before us tonight an example. You may be looking at it. You may see it out of the corner of your eye. But a year ago, I got an email from someone wanting to know if it was okay if she attended with an ASL interpreter. And I was thrilled. I was delighted to be able to say yes. Now, 2 weeks ago, I gave a talk about lists of abilities that we all have, and the fact that all of our lists of abilities aren't the same. So, for example, in this Sangha, there are people who are able to speak English. And there are people who are able to communicate with American Sign Language. There are very few who can do both. That number is growing, thanks to the generosity of Judy, who has been offering ASL classes for many months now. But as a Sangha, we need someone who is bilingual for us to really be a Sangha. For the people in this room who have different languages to communicate. And Debbie is here to help both the hearing and the deaf to do that communication. Our door is open for everyone to come in and share the practice and the Dharma. And Debbie enables us also to share the third jewel or refuge, which is Sangha, so that we can all get this gift and share it with each other. Now, ASL interpreters are professionals. It takes a lot of education, a lot of training, a lot of experience. And their hourly fee is rightfully high. So, this Sangha is a rather humble one. And the interpreter's fee can be a burden on someone who just wants to come and join the Sangha. So we didn't really have the money to pay these professionals. And we have relied for a year on the generosity of interpreters who have volunteered to complete us as a Sangha. Now, I just want to emphasize that Debbie is here as an interpreter. She's in this professional role. She's not here as our star for the evening. So we need to let her stay in that role and not try to talk to her one-on-one as long as she's interpreting. And that will probably be until she leaves this evening. And also, I broke the customs around interpreters by wanting to talk about Debbie. But she very thoughtfully got consents from everyone who's involved in this relationship. And what I asked Debbie was to tell me what her motive was in providing this really valuable service to us, and the effect that her volunteering had on her. And I got a couple of really wonderful emails this week, really very thoughtful and going into depth, which I'm sorry I can't share it all with you. But she has 25 years of experience, and in that time, she says the deaf have shared their culture with her. And she feels indebted for this and wants to give back. And also wants to, I'll quote, allow people from different cultures, the deaf and the hearing, to be in relationship with one another. And furthermore, for her, it's a matter of professional development. I mean, look at all the Pali she's learning. You don't get that opportunity everywhere. I asked her, don't you feel that you're sacrificing your Sunday evenings? And she said, no, it's never felt that way. And I'll quote again, I always feel happier and more relaxed after working. Physically, I feel a little expansion or loosening in my shoulders and jaw and head by the end of the meeting. It probably has something to do with the silence and stillness, parentheses, which I don't have a lot of in my life. That is terrific noting of the physical feelings in response to something. And that's the practice that I'm going to talk about more later. Just to recap, not much can be done in the Dharma until one is prepared to open one's heart and hands to others. We have these common mental tendencies that keep us struggling to satisfy desires for things that are impermanent and ultimately unsatisfying. Generous giving reconditions the mind and ends suffering in three ways. This comes from the suttas. First, joy arises, relaxing the body, and brings peace, which helps the mind concentrate. So this is very similar to what Debbie had to say. Joy arises, relaxing the body, and brings peace. Second, we reduce our attachment to the thing that's given. We let go of it. And this habit, if we build it into a habit, giving can weaken craving overall in our lives. And of course, that's a main cause of dissatisfaction or dukkha. And third, and most important, when it's practiced with the intent to recondition the mind, as I've talked about, generosity helps us all the way through the Eightfold Path. It helps us with wisdom, with ethics, and with our practice. So we can have a lot of different motives for giving. And they don't need to be judged. We can give out of fear or annoyance. Say we're approached on the street by someone whose clothes are dirty. Maybe doesn't look like they've bathed themselves for a while. And we feel that we're in danger, or we're embarrassed to be in this situation, and so we give money for them to go away. We can also give out of a sense of reciprocity, and this is ingrained in our minds as members of a capitalist society. You may not notice that you're doing it, but unless you're extremely unusual, there's a tally in your mind of who you owe and who owes you. We know where to go to call in the chips. We can also give to get a good reputation. And this was recently brought back to my attention. As a lawyer, I used to do pro bono work. And of course, I was held to the same professional standards. The idea there was that it looked good on the firm's marketing, that we did all this pro bono work. Well, I'll tell you, it felt good to me. I enjoyed doing pro bono work. So, you know, like I said, there's nothing wrong with these motives, whatever the motives are. But there is a highest motive, according to the Dana Sutta. And that is the thought, and this is in the language of the Sutta, this is an ornament for the mind, a support for the mind. So in our everyday language, that means that this giving is meant to rid the mind of greed and aversion. Those other motives are fine, but this is the one that leads to liberation. So the fact that these motives can be mixed is great because it gives us something to observe when we practice with generosity. And it is a real practice. And in fact, that's why we incorporate Dana into every single meeting. Because after we've meditated and considered the Dharma, we're in the best possible condition to do Dana practice. Buddha said there are three things of value for one who gives. Before giving, the mind is happy. While giving, the mind is made peaceful. After having given, the mind is uplifted. So you might just review in your own mind, what does that mean? Before giving, the mind is happy. Well, to me, I get to reflect on the fact that I have something that will help someone or something that I care about, and I can afford to give it without hurting myself or others I care about, the family budget. While giving, the mind is peaceful. To me, this means that I'm letting go of it. I've made the decision this is something worth my doing. I'm writing the check. I'm letting go of that money. And afterwards, well, I've let go. The mind is uplifted because I've let go of something that was holding me down, that clinging to that money. I've said I'm not going to cling to it. To reiterate, a big reason that we have Dana in Alameda Sangha is the opportunity to practice. Another reason is that Buddha said the gift of the teachings excels all other gifts. That's in the Dhammapada, in case you are concerned. It's a loose, sort of a loose paraphrase. So why should this be the greatest gift? Because it ends suffering for all who receive that gift. And I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that we teachers teach elsewhere. And I will teach anyone who asks me to. And the support that I get anywhere allows me to do that. It keeps the teachings going. And we do this as a Sangha. The teachers give the teachings, and the members support the Sangha with money. It sounds reciprocal, like capitalist reciprocity, and to the extent that makes you feel good, fine. To the extent that it is a response to gratitude, that's terrific, because gratitude is a great mind state to savor. It'll bring you joy. Now, I want to say, as an aside, but also to the point, that we three teachers are very careful to keep Dana devoted to and structured for the practice. We do not suggest that anyone give outside of the Sangha to any specific people or groups. We've just decided that that's our policy, and we've recommitted to that policy many times. But we do encourage that you mindfully practice generosity in your daily life. And to whom you give is your pick. I don't know that we've ever made this express before, but at our last meeting, all three of us teachers decided that in this talk I would say that you're welcome to bring flyers or postcards for causes that you care for and put them out like on the chairs next to the table and then take them with you when you leave. And also, if you are on the Yahoo group, which is nice, I encourage you to, then you can post causes that you care about on the Yahoo group. But, you know, as a Sangha, we teachers are not going to direct you to anywhere else to practice Dana except this basket. To have the highest motive, ridding the mind of craving and aversion, giving needs to feel generous. So when you do this practice, look for, and this is the language from the suttas, where the gift feels proportionate to the greed. In our language, or mine, I would suggest that means look for the edge of the clinging, your resistance to giving it. Again, without doing damage to yourselves or others who depend on your resources. Boundaries are good. And I think we've all had these sort of generosity binges. It feels good and we keep doing it. A caution is that we can be preyed on by others when we're not using discernment or wisdom. Tonight, be aware of your motives when you give and put money into that basket. Not to judge the motives or yourself, but just to get to know your mind. In Buddhist practice, that's the extent of our job, just to get to know our minds. Have an open awareness of when we're suffering or when there's joy. And the transformation just naturally follows on its own time. And I urge you to look for how your mind is happy before, peaceful while, and uplifted after you practice dana. And savor the joy of generosity. Thank you.